Okay. You know, there's a perfect storm. Perfect storm is when all the conditions come in where, you know, there's this, 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 and this, and that's just the way it is. But today is that perfect storm. It is now 12:45, and I'm just beginning. And I have like 58 slides. But you see one, so only 57 more. But the young man has come forward. We have a few fish and loaves in the back, and they've already been multiplied. So however long this takes for the teaching, invariably the food has been prepared. So we'll get to that once we're done with this. So the concept is studying Yahweh's word. And what I'm going to try and do today, to some degree, is sort of open up my heart, open up my mind. I try and do that, the mind part, every time, to show you my mind of how I see and how the word connects to me. But today, usually I bring a specific scripture where it's I see it and it's so clear. This part was, I thought to be clear, then it got gray, and then it got clear again, but the clear part was on the other side of the fence. And I think the point I want to get to in reality of studying Yahweh's word is we are never done. When we think we have any idea, well, I have a grasp, I know the pulse of this. He loves to pull the carpeting out just to watch us fall, so see if we'll get back up and check it out again. I'll tell you that specifically, the individuals who are in charge of bringing music have to really struggle with me, because when lyrics come to me, I'm sitting with like a microscope, and I look at every single verse, and it's got to be tough. They're extremely generous in the reality of waiting for me sometimes on some of the songs that they want to bring, just with the reality that I don't want specifically to bring a song and then find out, well, this verse was out of context. And I'm going to be honest with you, when I go to verses, I already think whoever interpreted it didn't interpret it correctly. I'm going to tell you right now, my first thought is, that's probably wrong. Now, I don't know about you, but that's just the way I've been trained. Every time I went, oh, that's the truth. Oh, no, it's not. That, never mind. The point being is, every verse, everything I go into, I already have the thought, it must be wrong. And to some degree, I'm looking for Yahweh to prove it to me, right or wrong. Okay? Now, that also means that I go around a block a lot in my mind. And sometimes I have to leave an issue, because you know what? There is secret things are his, and he is not ready to tell me yet. And that's okay, too. All right, so if you turn with me to Zechariah 8, 1 through 8. Prior to this verse, to give context, Yahweh says, I'm coming to my children, and when he comes, they are all sinning. They are all falling away. He was looking for just one person, like in the time of Noah or the time of Abraham. One person that he could step up and say, see, let's follow him. And he couldn't find any. And that leads us to this chapter. You'll notice that the actual chapter starts with again. So you know that it's connected. Again, the word of Yahweh of hosts came saying, thus says the Yahweh of hosts, I am zealous for Zion with great zeal. With great fervor, I am zealous for her. Thus says Yahweh, I will return to Zion and dwell in the midst of Jerusalem. Jerusalem shall be called a city of truth, the mountain of the Lord of hosts, of Yahweh of hosts, the holy mountain. Thus says Yahweh, old men and old women shall again sit in the streets of Jerusalem, each one with his staff in his hand because of his great age. The streets of the city shall be full of boys and girls playing in its streets. Thus says Yahweh of hosts, if it is marvelous, or is it marvelous in the eyes of the remnant of the people, will it also be marvelous in my eyes, says Yahweh. Thus says Yahweh of hosts, behold, I will save my people from the land of the east, from the land of the west, and I will bring them back. And they shall dwell in the midst of Jerusalem. They shall be my people, and I will be their God in truth and in righteousness. So what Yahweh is saying is, you know what? I tried looking for someone. There was nobody. So I'll do it all myself. And so you get the idea. The again, he does this a lot. It really is more dependent on him to fix everything than us. And let's be honest, every time we do try and fix something, it's just like Adam and Eve. I feel like I've lost my covering, so what do? Well, I found these leaves. I'm going to sew them together, right? We fix our problem. You can imagine those leaves, as I said in the past, when they dry out, you take one step, there goes your whole outfit. So is like every time we try and fix our own problems. Now I want you to hold on to that idea that Yahweh is going to make it a city of truth, which means it is not one at this moment. Now, key concepts. It says that the old men and women shall again sit in the streets of Jerusalem with staves in hand. You sit back, the old men and women, they're going to sit in the streets. Okay. Boys and girls will fill the streets and they'll be playing. Is it? And he asked the question, and I will tell you, this is like the thing that held me back. Why would Yahweh go, is it marvelous in the eyes of the remnant, and will it be marvelous in my eyes? To me, there was this idea of caution. Why ask the question if it's not marvelous to him? Is it marvelous in the eyes of Yahweh as well? In the eyes of Yahweh is the concept that Yahweh is going to come. See, Yahweh just doesn't hear about something being bad. He will hear, and at a time, he goes, I'm going to go and check it out myself. Think about Sodom and Gomorrah. I am going down to see how bad it is. Moses, I am going back to Egypt to see the people in bondage. So keywords, play. This is what I started with, okay? I started with the word streets. I really wanted to get into what happened in the streets and what are the streets. I wanted to understand the word marvelous because that question kept just going like a CD stuck on that spot. My mind was stuck on that word marvelous and I couldn't understand why would Yahweh be asking this. So the first word, Shahach in Hebrew. This is the word for play. And it means to laugh or jest. Okay? It also has a meaning to play, to sing, or to dance. It also means to mock or to make sport or to laugh mockingly. That's the hard part with Hebrew. There is that word can mean something positive or it can mean something negative. And I have to look at context and how it's used in all these different occasions to try and understand what words should be there, because I don't trust the person who wrote what word they put in. So one of the first times we see this in the idea of play is Judges 16:24. When the people saw him, they praised their God, for they said, by the way, this is the Philistines. Our God has delivered into our hands our enemy, this is Samson, the destroyer of our land, the one who multiplied our dead. So it's specifically speaking of Samson here. Verse 25, so it happened when their hearts were merry that they said, call for Samson that he may play for us. So they called for Samson from the prison and he played for them and they stationed him between the pillars. My first thought of this idea play was not a good one. They're going to have him come play. So this is like that mocking end. 27, now the temple was full of men and women, and the lords of the Philistines were there, about 3,000 men and women on the roof watching while Samson was playing. And we know what happens to this. So this playing brings about judgment and death, because Samson goes, woo, on the pillars. And down comes the roof. When the this word is mentioned is 2 Samuel 6:4. And they brought it out of the house of Anadab, which was in Gibeah, accompanying the ark of God. Noeo went before the ark. 6:5. And David and all the house of Israel played before Yahweh in the manner of instruments made of fir wood, even of harps, and on psalteries, and in timbrels, and cornets, and cymbals. Verse 6. And when they came to Nachan's threshing floor, Uzzah put forth his hand on the ark of Elohim and took hold of it, and the oxen, because the oxen shook it. So this is where they're praising, but the ark is on the cart, and the cart starts to teeter, and the ark starts to fall. Really fall. Now again, we got to be careful, because the ark would not have been specific like this. There would have been skins over it. See, a lot of us think of it this way, but you read in Leviticus the point that they put skins over it when they would carry it, which is, by the way, quite interesting that the word is wrapped in skin again. So you have this idea where it seems positive, but, you know, lightning comes down or whatever comes down, and the person who touches the ark, they're dead. 1 Chronicles 15:28. Thus all Israel brought up the ark of the covenant of Yahweh with shouting, with the sound of the cornet, with trumpets, with cymbals, making noise, with psalteries and harps. Verse 29, and it came to pass, as the ark of the covenant of Yahweh came to the city of David, that Michal, the daughter of Saul, looking out the window, saw David dancing and playing, and she despised him in her heart. See, she saw him as like, he's a king. He shouldn't just be, we're talking like, see, when he's dancing, he's not like, ooh, what's people thinking of me? This is the dancing we do when no one's in the house with us. And we're so excited, right? And we're going, thank goodness no one had a recording device at that moment. But we couldn't contain it. And this was David. So, is it positive or negative? Well, guess what? The word play as a whole could be both, right? So it doesn't really define it yet. We have to look at context to understand what this word play comes to. So that brings me to the next word, which is rechab, which is the word streets. All right? Now it's translated, interesting enough, as the broad place. Think of the idea like this huge expanse, a big opening. All right? For example, Yeshua speaks of the broad place, meaning there is the narrow road, right, that leads to life, and there is the wide or the broad road that leads to death, and many walk it. Same idea here, this broad space. It's an open place. It's a plaza, big opening space for people. It is wide streets. It is a place where judgment takes place. In the streets. Now, in the case of the streets, it would be right, the streets of the intersection of a city, like outside the walls. Now, Genesis 19:2 is the first time that this verse, or specifically word, comes up. 19:2 says, and he said, behold now, my lords, turn in. And by the way, this is Lot speaking to the angels that are coming down. I pray into the servant's house and tarry all night. and wash your feet, and you shall rise up early and go your way. They said, no, we will sit or live in the streets all night. This is what the angels say. We're going to go live in the streets. 19:4, before they lay down, so they did accept his invitation to go back to his house, the men of the city, even the men of Sodom, compassed around the house, both what? Old and young. And if we go back to Zechariah, it speaks of the old men and the young, both being out in the streets. All the people from every quarter. And what were they trying to do? They were trying to know the men. Now the word know is carnally. Rape. However you want to describe it. Really doesn't matter. They wanted to know the men. And they were hoping to do that in the streets. Right, so this is the first time street or the broad place is mentioned. Deuteronomy 13:17. So none of the accursed things shall remain in your land, that Yahweh may turn from his fierce of his anger and show you mercy, have compassion on you and multiply you, just as he swore to your fathers. He said to take all of the things, put them up, and burn them in the streets. This is what Deuteronomy says. So they're no longer around anymore. Burn them in the streets. The next time we see it is in Judges 19:15. This is going to seem familiar, by the way. They turn aside. This is, by the way, a Levite. He has a concubine with probably should not. It would be against Torah to have a concubine, so he's not living a perfect life either. He was going to stop at a Gentile, a city of the nations, but he decided, no, I don't trust them. Let's go to a city of Benjamin. And so as he comes in, aside there was a way to go and lodge in Gibeah. And when he went, he sat down in the open square, the streets of the city, for no one would take them in the house to spend a night. So he goes in the middle of the square and he sits down, waiting for someone to just open their house up. Judges 19:20, and the old man said, peace, shalom. However, let all your needs be my responsibility, only do not spend the night in the streets. Do not spend a night in the open square. 19:22, and they were enjoying themselves. Suddenly certain men, this is the old man and the Levite, the men of the city, perverted men, surrounded the house and beat on the door. They spoke to the master of the house, the old man, saying, bring out the man who came into your house, that we may know him carnally. So they're going to bring him out into the streets. The story does not get very good because the man decides, well, I'll give you my concubine. And it just gets worse from there. 2 Chronicles 29:4 through 5. Then he brought in the priests and the Levites and gathered them in the east street and said to them, hear me, Levites. Now sanctify yourselves, sanctify the house of Yahweh, your Elohim, of your fathers, and carry out the rubbish from this holy place. So he's in the street saying, it's bad, we need to clean this place up. And he's really getting the idea of teshuva, repentance. Isaiah 59:15. And what we need to know about Isaiah, and I'm going to get to Jeremiah in a moment, is that Isaiah and Jeremiah, and see, it's hard for us who study, we think the Bible is chronological. That as we read the Bible, every one of those books are somehow, well, this one led to this one. That's a lie. Okay, so for example, even though Zechariah is near the end of the Old Testament, Isaiah specifically and Jeremiah were spoken to the people before they were taken out of land. Meaning they were sinning, brought out of land. Zechariah is when they come back. Well, that fits. The problem is that guess what? Ezra and Nehemiah, they happen the same time as Zechariah. In fact, you read in Nehemiah and Ezra that the people heard Haggai and Zechariah prophesying and basically gave them hope where they were going through the tribulation. But Isaiah 59:15 actually links in. Remember, he was going to make in Zechariah, It is a city of what? Truth. And remember, also, it was the concept that Yahweh was going to go and do it because there's no man, right? So Isaiah 59:15, so truth fails? This is a question ask. And he who departs from evil makes himself a prey. Then Yahweh saw it, and it displeased him that there was no justice. Isaiah 59:16, he saw there was no man and wondered that there was no intercessor. Therefore, his own arm brought salvation for him. His own righteousness, it sustained him. For all respect to this time, it looked like truth had failed. Because as he looked at the people, it didn't look good. Jeremiah 5:15, it says this, run to and fro through the streets of Jerusalem, see now and know, and seek in her open places, that would be the same word as here, if you find a man, if there's anyone who executes judgment, who seeks the truth, and I will pardon her or him. Jeremiah 5:2, though they say, as Yahweh lives, surely they swear falsely. 5:3, O Yahweh, are not your eyes on the truth? You have stricken stricken them, but they have not grieved. You have consumed them, but they have not refused to receive. They refuse to receive correction. They have made their faces harder than rock, and they have refused to return to you. So his eyes are always on the truth. And if they're not, then invariably his eyes are going to cause judgment. Jeremiah 5:5, I will go to the great, and that word great means older, as one of the meanings, the great men, and speak to them, for they have known the way of Yahweh, the judgment of their God, but these have altogether broken the yoke and burst bonds. Meaning these great men would be like powerful men, men of renown of that time. I've already talked about how does Isaiah and Jeremiah connect. Well, they were when the people were sinning, and so Yahweh took them out. Zechariah is when Yahweh is bringing them back. Any books written about the time of Zechariah? Yes. We have Haggai, we have Ezra, and we have Nehemiah. Now, Ezra says this in 10:9, so all the men of Judah and Benjamin gathered at Jerusalem within 3 days. It was the 9th month of the 20th month, and all the people sat in the streets of the house of God, trembling because of this matter and because of the heavy rain. Basically, they'd gone out, and the way I read it is almost like they'd gone out and married Patrick, what were they called? The women who would give themselves in regard to an idol? Cult prostitutes. That they had sort of given themselves all to these cult prostitutes, which is the idea also when we see in the land when we have Moab and Midian, right, show up before Israel and they draw the men out up to the mountain to do these ceremonies. And they realize this. Now, this is after they've been brought back, by the way. Ezra 10:12, then all the assembly answered and said in a loud voice, yes, as we have said, so we must do. And they're repenting of the sin, and they're going to get rid of these cult prostitutes and come back to be pure before Yahweh. Okay? But realize this is after they've been drawn back. All right? Nehemiah is a far better picture. Nehemiah 8:1, now all the people gathered together as one man in the streets, so they gathered in the streets, that was in front of the water gate, and they told Ezra the scribe, to bring the book of the Torah of Moses, which Yahweh commanded Israel. So he says, bring it out, we want to hear it. It had been so long since they had actually heard the Torah. 8:2, so Ezra the priest brought the Torah before the assembly of men and women and all who could hear with understanding on the first day of the 7th month. Wow, we're getting ready for Sukkot. Right? 8:3, then he read from it in the streets that was in front of the water gate, in the morning until midday before the men and women and those who could understand and the ears of all the people were attentive to the book of the Torah. So like, yeah, they were so excited. And I hope you guys like them because we're going late and you know, we're going close to midday and I'm continuing to read. But we'll continue with that. 8:9. And Nehemiah, who is the governor, Ezra the priest and the scribe, and all Levites who taught the people, said to the people, "This day is holy to Yahweh Elohim. Do not mourn nor weep." For all people wept when they heard the words of the Torah. Because what they realized was that here they were, and they felt the sin. They recognized sin because they were now being taught light from darkness. And they were crying. But it was the season of their joy. So then they're breaking the command to be joyful by being sad. 8:15, and that they should announce and proclaim in all the cities, and in Jerusalem say, "Go out to the mountain and bring olive branches, branches of oil trees, myrtle branches, palm branches, and branches of leafy trees to make booths as it is written." 8:17, so the whole assembly of those who had returned from captivity made booths and sat under the booths. The word sat also means to live. Remember, it says the old men and old women sat out in the streets. For since the days of Joshua, the son of Nun, to the day the children of Israel had not done so, and there was a very great gladness going on. A very great gladness. Positive or negative? Well, we have a lot of negatives about the streets. And it seems pretty consistent in the negative what's going on in the streets. There is the positive view as well. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, there was so much evidence about the streets. My opinion specifically leaned towards Yahweh's coming back. It's the day of the Lord. That's not a great day. That's a day where we're changed. Where, just like in Egypt, the first three plagues came on who? Everybody. Because everybody had sinned, and he was trying to get them to change their heart. So my mind kept going back to that question, is it marvelous in my eyes? And my mind was saying, doesn't seem so. It does not seem so from what I had studied so far. In fact, it brought me to Matthew 24:37-38. But as the days of Noah were, so were the days of the coming of the Son of Man. For as in the days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark. And one of the words there is to make merry. Like they were just having this great old party. Didn't even realize judgment was coming. 39, and did not know until the flood came and took them all away, so also was the coming of the Son of Man, that they just were not ready. So my feeling at this point was, I'm not comfortable with this verse being a joyous one. I'm just not comfortable. And I taught that in Bible study. I was very blessed by a few individuals. They were asking about it. So I said, you know what? Anytime someone started asking questions, go, you know what? It's time to go back and research some more. Or at least go back and see it again. So I went back to Zechariah. Let's go through these verses, and then I want to hit the last few words. And we're actually close to being done. Zechariah 8:1-2. Again, the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, "Thus says Yahweh of hosts, I am zealous for Zion with great zeal. With great fervor I am zealous for her." 8:3. "Thus says Yahweh, I will return to Zion and dwell in the midst of Jerusalem. Jerusalem shall be called the city of truth, the mountain of Yahweh of hosts, the holy mountain." Because why? Because Yahweh is going to do it. Verse 8:4, "Thus says Yahweh of hosts, old men and old women shall again," ooh, there was an important word, something I didn't notice before, "they shall again sit or live in the streets of Jerusalem." Remember that verse in Nehemiah? It says that this hadn't been done since the time of Joshua. It's like, oh, so these old men and old women could be pointing back to that verse. Each one with his staff in his hand because of his great age. Zechariah 8:5. The streets of the city shall be full of boys and girls. Streets. 8:6. Thus says Yahweh of hosts, if it is marvelous in the eyes of the remnant of this people in these days, will it also be marvelous in my eyes, says Yahweh of hosts. And that was the big question. I couldn't get over that question. Why ask the question if it's positive? So I went looking up the word marvelous again. And it's pala. It means to be marvelous or wonderful, meaning it's like great, good. It means to be surprising or extraordinary. To separate by distinguishing action. Beyond one's power, too difficult. And this last one sort of hit me. When Moses is in the desert, which, by the way, the desert is a broad, open place, of which they all lived in booths, right? The people kept going, we want meat. We're hungry. Might be familiar to write like right now. We want meat. And Moses, this incredible man of faith, sits back and goes to Yahweh, do you realize, Yahweh, how much meat you would need to provide for them? You know there's like 1.5 million people, because there was like 500,000 men. So if you have women and children, we're going to multiply it times 3. 1.5 million people. Do you realize? Out here in the desert, I don't see anything. And you're going to provide meat for all of them? And Yahweh goes, is it too hard for me? Is my arm too short? Am I too weak? That's what Yahweh says to Moses. And so I'm sitting here going, too difficult, too marvelous. Well, that puts a whole different take on that verse. Thus says Yahweh of hosts, is it too amazing in the eyes of the remnant of this people in these days? Will it also be too amazing in the eyes of Yahweh? This becomes an issue like, could we ever believe that Yahweh could do it? After as bad as things were going, that Yahweh could actually save us and turn it around and make it so good? And so if there's a positive turn here, oh my goodness, this verse now completely takes me from being cautious to being optimistic. And is it too amazing for Yahweh? Nothing's too amazing for Yahweh. So other clues. Zechariah 8:3 says, thus says Yahweh of hosts, old men and old women shall again sit in the streets of Jerusalem, each with his what? Staff in his hand. And I was like, you know what? I've heard that before. And I don't think Yahweh's putting it in there by accident. They're going to have a staff in their hand like they did at an earlier time. So what verse do I think about? Exodus 12:11. Exodus 12:11 says, and thus you shall eat it with a belt in your waist, your sandals on your feet, and your staff in your hand, so they shall eat it in haste. It is Yahweh's Passover. So there's some connection to Passover and that idea of the staff in hand. What does this have to do with Passover? Well, Leviticus 23:42 says this, speaking of the season of Sukkot, and you shall dwell in booths for 7 days, all who are native Israelites who dwell in booths, that your generations, whether old or young, may know that I make the children of Israel dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. I am Yahweh your Elohim. So he's comparing them being brought back from the nations to being brought back from Egypt. Now, what's intriguing in that process is that there are other verses now to consider in a positive light. One, he says, I'm going to make a highway in the desert, right? And this actual highway was going to be a way that all of the nations could come back to Jerusalem. The high would be made low, the low would be brought up. Then I was thinking, you know what? Yeshua has spoken about this as well. He spoke about it in the parable of the wedding feast. Because when the inhabitants decline, he specifically says, go out into all the streets and gather the good and the bad and bring them back to my feast. Go to all the broad places, the open spaces, and bring them back. Now, before I get to lessons, my point is this. Today, I'm going to emphasize this, today I believe the beginning of Zechariah is actually Yahweh making these places which were horrific, making them actual places of rejoicing. Meaning these broad places where man has gone in and done terrible things, not only changing them, but bringing them to a place where Yahweh can actually find rejoicing in them. Where he cleans them up and restores them. But the bigger lesson, because this whole point was the idea of studying his word. We need to examine all the words and connections all the time. I'm not even talking about the idea of just reading your word and going, oh, that's what it says. See, it says it right there. We need to look for context in the section, in the chapter, in the book, and at the same time frame. Because context gives us clues to how those words fit together. We need to be always open to Yahweh teaching us, even if it is a scripture we have studied in the past. And as a teacher, then you better be willing to get back up and reteach it if you learned it a different way. Need to, have to. We need to be willing to change our minds. Our ways are not his ways. Our minds are human, they are frail, and they're limited. Yahweh's mind is infinite. So in that regard, number one, I needed to come back and reteach this, seeing it differently. But two, it was a great opportunity to open my life and say, listen, I studied this. Look at all these verses. I think a lot of you were coming to the same conclusion I came to. And then it all flipped all the way around. Right? A lot of times we come to this movement going, I've left behind all those things. And Jacqueline brought this up. I've left behind that. I've left behind that. I've left behind all these great things. Now I've found the place to live. If you ever think that you've got it all now, this journey is not about going. When Abraham got to the land, guess what Yahweh had him do? Oh, go out and explore the whole thing. He kept moving them. You don't think he's going to do the same with us? This movement, if you're tired of change, I'm really sorry to tell you. You know, when he said leave your house and your father and all that, it was the first change. Of all the changes that go up to the last change. And that last change only is the last change because you know what? Our body couldn't last any longer. Time to go home. And that's my point today. The studying His Word is a lifelong journey. And we seek to find the truth. But there are certain places you're going to go back to and you're going to go, ooh, let's go back and look at that. And it's new all over again. It's new all over again. And that's only possible because he who formed the light and shaped this earth wrote it. Because he said it. Only his word can be that deep and that powerful. Baruch Hashem. Yevarech Yahweh v'yishmerecha. Ki Yahweh tibendega et v'techa. Yahweh bless you and keep you. Yar Yahweh panavedecha v'hunecha. Ki Yahweh hagas rostos benester sobriti ite concedes supa. May Yahweh's face shine upon you and be gracious to you. Yisi Yahweh panavedecha. V'yisem lecha shalom. Ki Yahweh muestres su rosto sobriti ite concedes supas. May Yahweh's face turn towards you and give you peace. And even as we close today, we even have another thing to celebrate on top of all of that. Amy and Dean have come to be married in the eyes of God. So it's something to congratulate. So is a monster blessing. Shabbat Shalom.